because I was kind of part of that session. But that, yeah. But normally I'll sit over there. Thank you. If you could just grab your coffees and get settled, we'll get started in a few seconds. Thanks. Okay. Good morning, everyone. We'll get started so you have your full hour and a half to enjoy the speakers this morning. It's nice to see you all here this morning, and I'd first like to start off by acknowledging that we're conducting our business today on the traditional territory of the Musqueam First Nation and the Coast Salish peoples. We have an excellent session on offer this morning, which is followed by part two this afternoon, speaking. Speaking as a leader is designed to give you practical tools and guidance to communicate clearly and inspirationally. You'll learn how to organize your thoughts in a logical manner, craft a key message, and use your physical and vocal presence to help keep your audience engaged. Leading these sessions today are Travis Streb and John Voth with the Humphrey Group. Travis Streb works with senior leaders as a coach, facilitator, and speaker across North America. From his project management and utility experience, Travis is quickly able to get to the core of the issue and help his clients lead more effectively in a wide range of situations. Travis is a born and raised Vancouverite, but now calls Deep Cove his home, where he lives with his wife and two daughters. When he's not working with his clients, you'll find him climbing the North Shore Mountains on his bike, on foot, or on skis. John Voth is a consultant based in the Humphrey Group's Vancouver office. He has experienced working in labor relations as a union representative, which has helped him to teach others how to effectively communicate in difficult conversations. For John, the most important part of his work is in helping people to become the leaders they want to be. John specializes in developing and enhancing his clients' physical presence, a skill he has perfected through his extensive experience in theater, film, improv, and television. Please join me in welcoming our speakers, Travis and John.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sonia. Good morning, everyone. So just to get it clear, I'm Travis. This is John. You're going to get mixed up. I get it. Two guys, beards. It happens all the time. I was actually telling Aaron from LGLA that I once delivered a course just like this to a group of folks, and they wrote John a letter thanking him for it after. He wasn't even in the room. Apparently, our website photos look the same. So we are with a company called the Humphrey Group, and you are here to learn a little bit about what it means to speak as a leader. So the Humphrey Group, really, it's the marriage of two concepts, the concept of leadership and the concept of communication. So we're not really a leadership firm, and we're not really a communications firm. We're where they meet in the middle. So this idea, this marriage of these two concepts, came from a woman called Judith Humphrey back in the 1980s. So if those of you were in the workforce back then, don't raise your hands, but you may remember. Maybe some of you still have these in your local governments, but wood-paneled boardrooms, yes. Executive communication meant that every now and again, maybe once a year, an executive would come out on stage and communicate en masse the vision for the company and then go hide away in their office for the rest of the year. So Judith's job at that time was to help these executives to write speeches and deliver them. So she was an executive speechwriter. So she'd go and she'd toil away in her office in this bank in Toronto, write these speeches, hand them over to the executive, and then she would go and sit in the back of a room just like this, but dimly lit, more wood paneling. And what she would do is she'd watch as inevitably they would flop. Stand behind the podium, stare at their shoes, head down to the audience. No vocal expression, no personality, nothing. Just flat delivery of an amazing speech written by an amazing woman. So serendipitously, she's in Toronto, Judith, she runs into this actor, American actor called Marshall Bell. Anyone heard of him? That's why he was working in Toronto at the same time. Helping executives work on their delivery skills, on their presence. So Marshall Bell was in the movie Stand By Me, in case you're wondering. He was the dad. That was the end of his roles. and tell Starship Troopers where he was a guy in a helmet. So anyhow, Marshall and Judith sit down. They have coffee together in Toronto. Bam, this idea of the Humphrey Group is born. So the idea of leadership through communication is one that Judith has created and that now we've evolved over the years, because executive communication is only one form of communication. What she did was she created this leadership model. Ooh. She said, okay, well, there's four components to this. There's mindset. Well, you've got to be thinking about communication as a vehicle for leadership first. That's all well and good. But then how do you do it? So we got to get the right mindset. Next piece is, well, you've got to have a framework for organizing your thinking. She calls that the script. That's great. You could have all the great ideas and have a wonderful script, and it might be full of jargon or acronyms or minimizing language. The language actually matters. Language is what brings your ideas to life. So you have all of that, and you could write a good email. The last piece of the puzzle is about presence. Can you actually deliver? And not just deliver in a room like this where you're in front of a group, but maybe on a conference call, maybe on a one-on-one conversation. Do you have the awareness of what you're doing with your nonverbal cues to actually connect with an audience? So to orient you to our day, you've got a folder in front of you. And guess what? This folder is an exact mirror of this leadership model. So if you open it up, you'll find that, oh, there's a script page in here. You can take that out. That's going to be your exercise you're going to use for the morning. But inside that first page, what do we have? Mindset. Turn to the centerfold. We got script. We've got language. And we've got presence. So this morning, we're going to look at two components. We're going to look at mindset briefly, and we're going to spend the bulk of our time on a highly practical framework for organizing your thinking called the leader's script. We may touch on language as we go. It'll look a little bit like John and I calling you out on when you use jargon or acronyms that are government specific, which I'm sure you've seen. If you're going to join us again for the afternoon, we're going to look at that fourth page, which is presence. On the back of this, you've got a section for notes. If I or if John says something brilliant, which happens all the time, you can write it down. Or if you have an idea about something else, write it down. It's a great thing for you to hang on to. Now, I know you go to a lot of training sessions. A lot of the binders you get, they end up collecting dust. This one can collect dust until all of a sudden you realize, I've got to do a presentation next week. Pull that thing out, have a look at your notes, have a look at what you've got. It'll be a guide for you. It'll also be a guide for you today as you're going through the exercises. So why go through all the trouble of creating this model and working with professionals to help them communicate as leaders? Well, it really comes down to this central idea. And it's a belief that I hold and a main message for this entire day, which is every single time that you communicate, it's an opportunity for leadership. You don't have to take every opportunity. So if you're going to have a quick casual chat over the coffee break with someone that you don't know or maybe a colleague of yours, you don't need to think about having an inspiring message. Or maybe you do. Maybe there's someone in this room or in this conference that you really want to influence. Maybe you actually do plan to say something, to put your thinking on the table. Well, today is about allowing you to identify and capitalize on the opportunities that you want to take. So it's not every time you pick your spots, but what this framework will do and this approach, it'll allow you to capitalize on them more frequently and more effectively. Any questions so far? Nobody wants to speak. All right. So let's talk about this mindset piece first. So if you flip the page, we're talking about these six guiding principles for adopting a leader's mindset. Now keep in mind, we're talking about this in the realm of communication. All of you in this room are leaders. That's why you're here. And you're gonna do a lot of things in your day-to-day that help other people to know that you're a leader and help others to follow you, that you inspire them. One way that you do that, and I would argue an important one, is how you communicate with them, how you communicate to people. Whether it's that short, snippy email that you write at 11 o'clock at night, or it's that really important one-on-one conversation that you have with one of your staff. These are the vehicles for leadership. So bear in mind, we don't pretend that communication is the be-all and end-all of leadership, but we do believe it's a big piece. So with that in mind, we've set forward some guidelines for adopting a leader's mindset when you're communicating. No surprise, what's the first principle? Vision. It's written down on the sheet. The answers are all in front of you, I promise you. I won't ask you the answer you don't know. Okay, vision. You've all heard this. Probably every single leadership course that you go to starts with vision. We think back to Stephen Covey, begin with the end in mind, all this kind of stuff. What does it mean to have vision when you communicate, though? What does that mean? Have a central message. Yeah, have something to focus on. What else? Have a goal for your communication. Yeah, could be as simple as that. What else? Yeah. Yes, especially, I mean, I've actually been to most of the communities that you're from, not a lot of tall buildings. You better hone your pitch. No, you're absolutely right. Can you say it in the elevator ride? Or maybe it's actually just walking up the stairs. Can you say it concisely? It's important. So it's early in the morning, but John and I are going to make you go through a quick vision exercise. What we're looking for is for you to identify either a vision that you have in your role, so it could be a long-term vision. Maybe it's aspirational. You may never achieve it. You're just always going for it. Maybe it's, I exist in my role to be this. I might complete that sentence. Or it could be super short term. A vision for what you want to get out of this conference. A vision for today, for this morning, what you want to get out of our day. Or it could be that you've got some important communication coming up and you want to write down the vision for that. The key is, to this gentleman's point, you got to keep it brief. Vision has got to be sticky. You can have multiple layers. You can have a vision and then a multiple strategy underneath of it to achieve it. But what's that crystallized idea? What's that vision that you have? So we're going to ask you to do some writing briefly. So either on your notes page, on the back of that folder, or on loose leaf paper that you have, or the back of that script pad, the piece of paper that says the script on it, on the back of that, I'm going to ask you to write down something visionary. We're giving you tons of leeway here. We usually force people into a bit of a structure. Something visionary. And yes, we're going to pick on a couple of you or ask you to share. Want to practice sharing your vision. So we'll give you a couple of minutes to do a quick speed vision exercise. Write down anything visionary. All right, people are laughing. This is a good sign. So what have you come up with? Anyone want to volunteer their idea? Thank you.
Global climate change and the Chilliwack River Valley. How do I preserve
We're going to be clapping a little bit this morning, so get your hands warmed up, your brains are warmed up. Yes, there is a vision, protecting water supply amidst climate change and rapidly depleting glaciers. Capture that? Eloquent, concise. At the back of the room, sir.
Yeah, I'd like to get the Yale Community Center to get along.
I love it. So we want to get the Yale Community Center to get along. Yeah. It seems like a pretty easy objective, right? No. All of you know how hard that is. Let's do one more. Yes. Wow, that's harder than the Yale thing, I think. Get people to vote for more taxes. We'll see. It's a vision. It does not need to be world-altering to be visionary. We had a vision that I just saw from these women up front, who I told them I wouldn't pick on, and now I am, about establishing a mentorship program. Just a vision for where you want to go. Now, consider if you really went through your outbox or even your inbox looking at your emails, would you really be able to identify the purpose behind a lot of those communications? Now, sure, there are going to be some that are just transactional. There's going to be some that are, you know, maybe from your pay system, you just ignore them. But the ones that are actually written by a human, be it you or someone else, is there anything visionary, not in them, but behind them? Are they working towards some kind of end goal? The reason that I ask that is that this is such an important part. It's like, stop. Use the acronym WAIT. Why am I talking? Well, I actually get paid when you talk, but yes. Why am I talking? Why am I writing this email? Why am I having this conversation? If you can put that filter on before you write, before you speak, before you go on a phone call, it can really help you gain some clarity. So it's great you have this vision. We heard some compelling visions already from the three folks in the room. But what's behind that? What's behind it is really our second guiding principle. It's about beliefs. We say conviction. Beliefs are the currency of leadership. When you hear leaders speak, when you read what they write, they speak and they communicate with conviction, meaning they say what's in their head. They put their thinking on the table, and yes, they do it so others can judge it and compare their own thinking to it. So we're going to do one more exercise here around beliefs. This is an important one. So I'd like you to look down at what you wrote on your vision statement. I'd like you to consider, what are the beliefs that you hold that underpin that vision? In essence, why is this vision your vision? Why do you care about water supply in a world of climate change? You probably have 100 reasons. Why do you want to have this tax, this community center funded tax base? Or did I get that right? You basically want to have people pay for the community center through taxes? Why? What's the why behind it? So as a rhetorical question, I should have paused longer. Why do you want these things? What's the why behind it? Can you identify it? If anyone has seen Simon Sinek's TED Talk or read his book about the why, this is what we're talking about. What's the why behind that vision? So what we'd like you to do at this point is take pen to paper once more and write down 1, 2, 3, 10, 20 beliefs that you hold that underpin that vision. We'll give you a couple minutes for that one as well. Okay. I know that you're busily writing away. That exercise around coming up with an idea, a vision, and then thinking about, well, why do I believe this? Why do I believe so strongly in this? Is incredibly valuable, and not just for fun or for a thought exercise. This is the essence of coming up with a message. This gentleman in the back identified that as a vision being a message. Sure, it could be. But this is the process that we're going to ask you to go through when we start talking about the script in a few minutes. People are often like, well, what's the key message? The key message is, what's the one belief that you really want to share with this particular audience that you believe will cause them to think differently? So it's got highly practical application. The challenge is a lot of us don't go through the process. We think about the what, like what's at the end, and then we try to convince people with reasons. Here's the reasons why you should do this, in essence, or here's how we can do this. Or we start going into data. Maybe there's some fairness issues when we start talking about taxation. Well, this is, you know, start talking about all these different things. We get mired in detail, and we forget. Yeah, the detail's important, yes, but what does it all tell you? What conclusion have you drawn? People, professionals, smart people like you can look at a set of data or a circumstance and come to dramatically different conclusions. It happens all the time. It is the essence of all scientific debate. In fact, it's how the scientific process works. People take data sets, they analyze them, they come to different conclusions. They argue about it, debate. Facts do not speak for themselves. It's about what you believe. Well, this is really about that third principle, moving from information-focused communication to inspirational communication. Let me be clear. We're not trying to turn you into Tony Robbins. That's motivational speaking. He's a wonderful human being and a great speaker, changed a lot of lives. That's motivational speaking. It's different, trying to get people jazzed up. Inspiration means to breathe life into. Inspiring communication causes people to think. And when you put your belief on the table, guaranteed the room starts to go, I wonder if I believe that in their own heads. Or maybe they know right away they're vehemently opposed to that idea. That's okay. At least you said the thing you wanted to say. So we want to move from this information-focused communication to inspirational communication.
Travis, can I also add something?
Please.
So very often we use information to come to our own conclusions first when we talk to people. Anybody been in a PowerPoint presentation where there's a whole bunch of information at the end it says, and that's why, at the very end? And we're going from the opposite direction. We are first sharing beliefs, and then we want a reaction from it. We want people either to agree with it or disagree with it. And then the information that we have is not information anymore. These are arguments. These are the pillars of our belief now. And then people can either disagree or agree with it afterwards. Information turns from something that is a foundation to what we're saying to more supporting what the actual belief is. So we have to switch that around now, because we approach everything from information first.
So we want to lead with inspiration and follow with information, if needed. Here's the problem with that. It takes courage. We're now on to our fourth principle, if you're still counting. Courage is our fourth guiding principle. When you say the thing that you want to say, when you put your thinking on the table, guess what? People can judge it. It feels uncomfortable, which is why we tend to stick to the facts. Or we might use hesitant language to introduce it. We hedge, we cut down our own idea before we throw it out. Well, I might have a little idea here. Or this gentleman in the back who talked about Yale Community Center? I saw him writing down and he wrote, I feel. We feel. We're human. You should feel. The challenge is that for some reason in the Western world, when we say I feel, it just doesn't have the same persuasive ability as when we say, I believe, or I'm convinced. I'm not quite sure why that is. It's the way language has evolved. So can you really have the courage to put forward an idea without hedging it, without undercutting it first, and saying, I believe we should, or my thinking on this is, that takes courage. It takes courage to actually stand for something. So part of this exercise we're going to go through is about having the courage to say the thing that you want to say and to say it early, to get the idea out there and be ready for people to disagree with you. You can't argue with facts. It's true. You can also bore a lot of audiences with them. So our fifth principle is about it being a constant everyday process. How many politicians in the room? All right. So you've likely all heard, if you're a politician, you know, the microphone or the video camera's never off. Yeah, it's kind of true. The key here is it's about consistency. So in the political world, if we watch debates or we hear the media coverage, there's a lot of talk about consistency. Talk about people flip-flopping all the time. That's become this pervasive idea. Well, the reason that is because if we're looking for a leader, we want someone who's consistent. The challenge is, as a leader, you're allowed to change your mind. In fact, you should, in many cases, change your mind, admit when you're wrong, and that's okay. What we do want is we want leaders to show up and communicate consistently. So we don't want to have a leader who perhaps is a politician, who in council chambers is this wonderful, composed person, this great communicator. Yet when they're interacting with staff, they're terrible, they're dismissive, they dismiss ideas. We want to see consistency in our leaders. If you work as a staff member, are you one way with a certain audience and a different way with somebody else? Maybe it's not even your intention. Maybe you're great in person, which most of us are, but your emails just lack tone. You don't know how to open an email with a warm greeting. So people that don't know you aside from email, they just think you're a jerk. It could be. So we want to go for consistency with our communication. Last piece is, and this is a really important one, we're on our sixth guiding principle. This is the fun part. It's not about you. If you're communicating with a group of people, you are there to serve the audience, not serve yourself. Audience-centered communication. This will really be helpful this afternoon if you're going to join us again, because part of the challenge with being present is we get nervous. We get nervous and we get we-focused or I-focused. I'm going red. I'm shaking. I'm playing with my papers. What should I do? We should be thinking about, how can I serve this audience in the moment? Can I take a pause, compose myself, and continue on to be in service of them? So leadership and communication are audience-centered. So there's a whirlwind tour through the six guiding principles for adopting a leader's mindset when you're communicating. Questions so far? Yes. I am. Here, let me try and see if I can. Yes.
Difference between stating your belief and your inspirational message right up front versus measuring an audience and taking their feedback on where they want to go. I'm a little challenged by that. Oftentimes, in my role as a politician or a director, I'm gauging what the community wants to make my decision, more than just laying out my plan.
This is a really important issue. In a lot of cases, if you have role power, so if you're an elected official or if you have staff, you don't actually want to say, well, here's my idea, what do you think? Because they're all going to go, okay, the boss wants it. So part of it's about thinking, well, what's the idea that I want to inspire this audience with? So if you're going to go and speak to a group of folks and you want to engage them around, let's say, a climate change plan, you might not say, my idea for a climate change plan is this. It's a 10-part process and lay it all out, because your goal is to get input. You might say, what I believe is it's important to have everybody involved in any climate change plan. Here are some initial things I'm thinking about. You might lay those out. And then very quickly, what do you think? Throw it out to the audience. Some magic words in leadership are, what are your thoughts on this? And then you shut up. Yes. Well, you've likely figured out by now I'm not coaching him. Perhaps I should. I'll see. I'll see. So it's about really thinking about, well, what is the inspirational message I want to share? And when we get into our scripting exercise next, it's so important to be audience-centered. Because the me-centered message is, here's my great idea for a climate change plan. Because it's in your head already. But you know that getting other people's thoughts is going to make a way better plan. Well, share that with them. That's going to inspire them to contribute. Other questions or thoughts as we transition into script here? Okay. So we're going to move over to that second page. And now is the time to take out this piece of paper, which you are going to use to write a script. So it's called the leader's script. There's space in there to fill things out. You can use the back side of it as well. Has anyone seen this before? Yes. Was it through one of our courses, or just where did you see it? We're testing our intellectual property and seeing if people are stealing. I jest. So, anyone else? Yes? Of course you have. This is also online on our webpage. Okay, I've got a dangerous question. How many of you have been past 10th grade and you went to school in Canada? Okay, excellent. You've all seen it. This is the outline. Well, sorry, 1976 forward. Oh, yeah. Don't put your hands up. I'm not asking for that. This is the outline for the 10th grade English essay. Ring any bells? Okay. So for me, this meant Argyle Secondary School in North Vancouver had Miss Lawson in grade 10. We learned Monday through Friday about this framework. We talked about structure Friday afternoon. Okay, weekend essay assignment. Here are the steps. Step one, write your outline first. Just jot it down, make sure you know what you're going to say and write about. Then it's easy. You just fill in the blanks. So great. Friday afternoon goes by. Saturday, playing street hockey, playing soccer. Sunday, a little more street hockey. Sunday afternoon, I was pretty diligent. I'm like, I'm going to get to it. Take out my foolscap paper and my pencil. Start writing. A stream of consciousness. This wonderful piece of writing. And then the following Friday, I receive it back, and it has all this red ink on it. And there's a C at the top of the page. And I'm shocked and horrified. Why? What did she write? No structure. No central message. No conclusion. Lack of structure. These are all the same failings of modern day business communication or local government communication. So rambling thoughts, and when you organize them, it's such a beautiful thing. And that's why the script is there, because clear communication comes from organized thought. So we're going to work on this script. We're going to work on it together, and we're going to work on it out of order. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk you through it really quickly so you know what it's all about, and then we're going to start working on the subject, the message, the call to action. We're going to bounce around a bit. By the end of this morning, you will have one less thing to do, because you're going to work on an actual communication that you have coming up. It does not have to be a keynote talk. Don't look for the mountaintop moment. Look for the everyday opportunities to influence. If you've got a big keynote coming up, great, you can prep for it. But you'll have the full outline for it. So, how do we start? We open with this thing called a grabber. We want to build some rapport with the audience, or we want to set context. In many cases, if you're in a government situation, you're not trying to do a lot of rapport building, but you might. It's mostly for context. What's the context behind this? It's brief. We then want to lay out the subject area for the talk or the email. If you have email, it's baked in. It's called the subject line. FYI is not a subject. FYI. Okay, so we get the subject out. Then you've got to hit people over the head with the key message. This gentleman's point in the back. This is where the message comes out. It's the thinking that you want to put on the table, the belief you hold that you want your audience to hear. That comes out. Now, the hard work is done. All you have to do is prove it. So you have a little structural statement like, let me tell you why I believe this, or let me tell you how I believe we can achieve this, something like that. A little signpost tells the audience where you're going. Really helpful for them. And then you have all these points. You got to back it up. Just to be clear, there's 3 points on this page. You can have 1 point, or you can have 1,000 points. This fits on 8.5 by 11 paper. That's why there are 3. If anyone tells you to shorten your communication so that it always has 3 points, they're possibly crazy. Yes, it's true that people do remember things in groups of 3. So maybe you try that out. But if you have 4 really important points to make, why would you cut one out? Or why would you invent 2 more if you only have 1? Just for the sake of memory. Not a good reason. So use as many as you want. If your talk or your email, your conversation's been long enough, you might want to restate your message at the end. I promise you will not sound like a broken record. For all the politicians in the room, you know. You can say your message like 1,000 times. People will forget it. That's how it works. What was my message for today? Anyone remember? Nope. Yeah, that was the opening part of, yeah. Every single time you communicate is an opportunity for leadership. I signposted it. I said, the big idea, my main message for today, it's been 15 minutes and we forgot. Okay, so restate your message. And then the beautiful part of all of this is you call the audience to action. Or you call yourself to action. Now, there are exceptions. If you're doing a council briefing, they often want to know what decision is expected up front. So you move the call to action up front and then remind them at the end again. So there is some flexibility here. So let's get to work. Let's talk about subject. Oh, my slides are misordered. I'll have to go back to that one. Subject is first. It paints the boundaries around your conversation, around your talk. Super important to get it right. It is a single, neutral statement about what you're there to talk about, or what the content of this email is, or what the conversation's about. Single sentence. Neutral. The neutrality test is key. This is not where you're trying to put your belief on the table. You're just trying to paint the boundaries around it. If you look at the handout, the folder that we gave you, there's some guidelines in there for what a good subject looks like. You might say, today I'm here to talk about, or the topic of this meeting is, or let's discuss. Okay, over to you. First step is pick something that you're going to work on that's real, which you should already have in your head. You all communicate on a regular basis? You got something to work on? And write out the subject line that you would use for that communication. Folks, I had a clarity issue. You're just filling out the subject line. I was not clear in my communication. I get an F on that one. Just the subject line. Some people are choosing to work ahead, and that's okay. But you're going to end up changing it, because we're going to have to teach you some stuff. So just subject line. You probably won't. Works. Okay. So, people have really captured the idea of subject line. The concept is easy. The concept is really easy. Try putting it into practice, where you actually say the subject before you get into stuff. Start listening for it. The next meeting that you go to, does the person actually tell you what you're there to talk about?
There's also another element that the subject can help you with. You can help form the communication within the meeting. So at the beginning, when you state your subject, and you know it's going to be a loaded topic, it might be veer off into different paths, you can say up front, we're going to talk about this today. If it does go off the veer path, I'm going to bring it back in. So instead of in the middle of a heated conversation saying, well, we're not talking about, let's bring it back in, and people getting offended by that, you can start by saying that at the front, and you form the discussion in that way.
If it's a council meeting, it might still go off the rails. We can't promise you that it won't. Do your best. Okay, so the subject line. Who would like to volunteer their subject line? Who hasn't gone yet? We've got this gentleman right here, and then I'll ask you to share as well. So what are you talking about today? What's your subject line?
Increasing the remuneration to our volunteer firefighters.
I want to talk about increasing remuneration for our volunteer firefighters. Kind of kills the whole volunteer word, I guess, eh? Is it neutral? Does it pose an argument? Okay, so we have a subject that might be kind of messagey. He's really saying something here. How could he make it neutral? And does he want to? Sorry, I know you can't see my eyes. I apologize. So he could just say remuneration. I want to talk about remuneration for our volunteer fire department, our volunteer firefighters. And then he could follow it by, I believe that we should be increasing their pay. Here's why I believe that. Blah, blah, blah. Maybe. Maybe it waters it down too much for you. I don't know. The key question you want to ask is, if I say the word increasing, to Laura's point, will it automatically get the audience's back up? Will they put the earplugs back in and go, yeah, you're always on about this. I don't want to. Or does it give you a chance to talk about something in a different way? That's really for you to decide. I want to hear one more subject line. Yes, I know you can't see my eyes. I'll try to really.
I'm trying to get people together to form a society.
For? Cherry Creek, right?
Yeah.
A society for Cherry Creek. Subject line. Neutral? Yeah. Paints boundaries around a conversation? Yep. Okay. That's the essence of it. Let's move on. So we get the subject out. That's great. Now we want to figure out what is the key message that I want to share. The key message is the most important part of this whole script. So if you're about to go to the washroom, just hang on a second. Don't miss this part. This is the one idea that you want to leave your audience with. The central message. It's a belief that you hold about your topic area that you believe will cause your audience to think. They don't have to agree with it. Okay, so you're saying something here. The message has got to be positive. Anyone got a negative message they have to share? Yes.
Don't request
Pardon me?
Hillary Clinton cheats.
Okay, not really a message though either. It's just a statement.
But the next thing he says, the subject, I'm here to talk about Hillary Clinton.
So I believe she cheats? I believe that she cheats?
Yeah.
Okay, it's more, I mean, it's a bit of a statement message. So messages are founded in belief. The I believe she cheats could be a reason he could say, I believe that Hillary Clinton's a bad leader. Still negative. I believe that I would be a better leader. Let's juxtapose myself and Hillary. So you could use situation response or comparison as a way to lay it out. First reason could be, well, I don't cheat and Hillary does. Now we're into the structural part of the script. So the message is founded in belief. It's not just a fact. People often try to use fact messages. They don't work as well. No inspiration, doesn't cause you to think. You're like, well, it's just a wrong fact, as opposed to, I disagree with you about that belief. Positivity wins the day. Anyone else have negativity they want to share? Yes?
Scientists tell us that BC's glaciers will disappear by the end of the century.
That's your grabber.
Yeah, that's where I...
Okay, so let me take a little segue here. Okay.
So the grabber then is talking about my subject, which is preserving and protecting CRB's water supply for future generations. The grabber would be something along the lines of
it'll come to you.
Yeah.
The reason I'm taking a segue is the same reason we're working on the grabber last. As you're writing things out, your message, your subject, your points, you're gonna realize there's some piece of context needed here, or I've got a great way I can build rapport with this audience. There's a woman here working on her iPad. She already had just wrote down, here's an idea for a grabber. She said, it might be wrong, and I'm like, it probably isn't. You're thinking along the right lines, but often the grabber comes to you as you're writing. So as you get ideas for how you might want to open this talk or this email or this phone call, just jot them down. You're totally on the right track. So we want to share positive messages. If you have negativity to share, you do it in the grabber, right up front, which we haven't talked about yet, I know that, or you qualify your message with it. So here's what it might look like. While it's true that our contingency reserve fund is at zero, I believe with our new CAO, we'll be able to replenish that by 2020. Okay, so we just flip it. You share the negativity first, and then bridge to the positive message. Sounds a lot different than, we have a great new CAO, and she's gonna bring our house in order. Problem is, our reserve fund's at zero. So just turn them around, you're saying the same thing. You're not dancing around anything or trying to spin. We don't want you to be spin doctors. Just flip it. It's amazing how you can change a phrase. If it's a really big negative, and it's the elephant in the room, don't just qualify your message with it, open with it as your grabber. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. So positive messages win the day. Keep them short. The maximum number of words, I'll give you a guideline here, is between about 17 and 22 words. Yes, one and two word or letter words count. Make sure it's a message written for your audience, not just for you. And the rest will take care of itself. We'll give you a bit of time to write down your messages now. So we're just working on the message part now. So what's that belief you hold that you want to share with the audience? How are we doing? All right. So I've been around to see a handful of tables, we'll say. I know John's still having a few conversations. Here's what I'm noticing. You're doing it right. And then you're surprised. It's like, they're like, is this right? I'm like, yeah, it's good, it's good, it's good. And it's not just that I want to get through it. Everyone has got the concept. So here's the key. Like, conceptually, this stuff is not overly challenging. You know what you're doing. Are you doing it consistently? If you really went back and took a look through your outbox and things you sent, like, is there a message you can filter through? Do you have structure? Have you laid out your subject line? I'm also noticing a lot of folks are starting to write down some ideas for the grabber. We had a gentleman from RDEK, was it? Did I get that right? Sorry, you can't see my eyes. From RDEK saying, you know, it's been 18 months since we last spoke. That could be all you need for a grabber. It's just, oh, right. Oh, you're that guy from RDEK. Yeah, OK. Memory comes back. Context is set. Move into your topic. Or you could do more detail. We'll talk about it in a bit. I also saw a gentleman who was talking about, well, what about I think? Does I think work? Sure. It likely, because of a weird language nuance, won't be received as well as I'm convinced, I believe, or even saying my thinking on this is. So if you say my thinking here is, or I think, people tend to believe more in the my thinking on this is. It feels like you're putting more risk in your communication. It's just a language nuance. There are other ways you can open a message. You could state a message. Just say what it is. You might get people's backs up, but if that's what you want to do, you could go for it. But using the word I believe or I'm convinced, my thinking on this is, my main point, that can really help an audience connect to what you're about to say next. It takes us back to that why. Questions about message? Yes. It could.
Is it audience related? Like, if I'm talking to the board or to other people who sit in the same position that I do, then I believe statements aren't necessarily great. Right?
It is audience focused. Okay. You might do better with I'm convinced, or my thinking on this is, or what I've concluded is. Okay. It's not a woman thing.
It's essentially framing your belief with words. You don't have to use I believe. Use words that have come to you can say, the one thing I want you to take away today is, the most important thing I'm going to say today is, I believe, I'm convinced. So it's about framing that, making it stand out from the rest of the script. Yeah.
And the reason why I say it's a woman thing is because if a woman stands up and says, I believe this, then if a man stands up and says, I believe this, they'll think he's Martin Luther King.
Well, that is a woman thing. This script will not change gender role challenges in society. Okay? It will help you position your ideas correctly. Are you going to come this afternoon?
Yeah.
So it may be about how you're saying it. We'll find out. Possibly. We are moving down to the bottom of the script. We're looking at the call to action. Okay, call to action. Single biggest missing element of all communication is a call to action. We do a lot of work in business and we do a ton of work in government. It's almost never there. And if it is, it's like this really weak, kind of milky, like, well, I'm looking for your support. Great, you know what, I have a 5-pound bag of support for you here. You can have all of it. And then when you need more support, just come back. And I have a huge stockpile of it. John has more support for you too. We've got to get specific. What do you want? Ask for it. You may have to be diplomatic about how you ask for it. But calls to action. It's got to be a concrete action somebody can actually take.
The two words support and let's are killers of action. Let's grab coffee. Yeah, let's. Never really happens. So avoid those two words when it comes to actually trying to bring about action.
So concrete action. There has to be an actual action attached to it. We've got to be specific. We've got to be specific about who will do the action. And it's got to be timing associated with it, time-bound. Concrete, specific, time-bound calls to action. You could, if you want to say let's because it's part of your habit, that's OK. I use it all the time, and then I quickly catch myself and go, I say, let's talk more about this. What I'll do is I'll have a look in your calendar, and I'll find some time for us in the next 2 weeks. We'll sit down, have a quick chat, and try to see what we can come up with. OK, took me a while to get there. Still a call to action. It's concrete, specific, time-bound. I know who's going to do the thing. I'm going to find time in her calendar, and we're going to meet within 2 weeks. That's all it needs. There's no word count limit on the calls to action. You want to avoid having a laundry list for folks. And if you're pitching up the ladder, or let's say you're proposing something to council, there are diplomatic ways to have a call to action that won't make you sound like you're directing council to do something. Yes, back of the room. That is a call to action, my friend. Sure is. If you have to soft pitch a call to action, it's about language. So you might say, I'm looking to get your approval by the end of February so that I can continue on with the project schedule. What that does is it just reminds them that if they don't get it done, they shouldn't be surprised when your project is delayed. Then that means that they are the one who delays your project, not you. You can suggest that certain things are tied without saying, so get me your approval by Feb 28th, and I'll see you then. You just imply it and suggest, so you can soft pedal the call to action when needed. OK, let's get to work on our calls to action. You get writing. You're just working on the call to action, bottom of the page. That was the call to action. I need a volunteer who would like to actually come to a microphone and read what they have written down. Yes, I have a woman in the center table right here. Thank you.
So do you want my subject?
What I'd like you to do is this. I would like you, in the most inspirational manner possible, which we'll learn more about in the afternoon, mm-hmm. I would like you to deliver the subject, mm-hmm. the message, and the call to action only. That's all we want to hear. So this is like you have 30 seconds to get this whole thing out, in essence.
OK. The subject is new community hall? Big question mark. Your informed decision is your informed opinion is what this decision hinges on, is the message. And the call to action is, today we are asking you to fill out the ballot, yay or nay.
That's it. And excuse me, what's your name?
Oh.
It's OK, I didn't ask you for it. I'm asking you now.
Sally Watson, Thompson-Nicola Regional District.
Sally Watson, you are the first recipient of one of our books.
Oh, good.
Thank you, Sally. Okay. When you hear what Sally just said, that is, in essence, an elevator pitch. Subject, message, call to action. We have spent the vast majority of our time talking about those three things because these are the anchor points of any effective communication. You've got to have a subject, you've got to have a message, and there's got to be some action. They're also good jumping off points. So later on, when you're going back and you're like, well, I want to use this script thing that I saw last week at LGLA. How does it work? Those are great starting points. Start from, OK, I know the action I want to get. I want to get a council decision. OK, great. If I know that, what am I even talking about? OK, I know my subject. What do I really want to say? Message. Maybe you know what that belief is. You're committed to it. Great. Well, what is it about? What's the subject area that's related to? OK, subject out and then move down. OK, where do I want to go with the action here? Those are the three jumping off points: subject, message, call to action, your anchor points for this script. You get those right, you can do a whole lot of wrong in the middle and you're still going to be okay. Let's talk about the middle. So we're going to take us look at the structure of this thing. So we, if I can get back, there we go. There's two components of structure. There's a structural statement, and then there's those 3 points that you see on the script. We're going to talk briefly about these. This is like the subject line. It's not very hard to figure out. You all know how to create points. You know how to structure an argument. It's what you do for a living in many cases when you're pitching things or in front of counsel or trying to convince your staff. The key, though, is how you do it. You want to make it easy for the audience to listen to you. So here's what you have to do. You get that message out. Message comes out. The audience is going to have a question in their head. Why do you believe that? Or how are we possibly going to achieve that? They want to know a bit more. The structural statement is the answer to that question. I'll demonstrate. Who's got a message they can share with me? Yes. So I'm convinced that we can reduce the feelings of isolation that many elected officials have. That would be a good message for you. Stop it there. Okay, great. So I'm convinced we can reduce this isolation. What do you want to know? How? Or you might go, what isolation? And then how? So the structural statement should sound something like this. It could be, let me tell you how. Or, let me tell you about a plan I have to address this. We're just talking about the structural statement. It's a signpost for the audience. Or you might say, first, I'll talk a little bit about this feeling of isolation people have. Then I'll talk about how we're going to address it. If you're driving from the Lower Mainland to, in essence, anywhere east of here, you've got to go through Hope. Yes. Pardon me? Everything else passes beyond Hope, yes. When you're approaching Hope, what do you see above you on the road? Blue sky, sunshine, rainbows, yes. There are signs, right? Your choice. You can take the incredibly long Highway 1, or you might want to go Coca-Cola, or you can go Crow's Nest. I know. So you have choices, but it's a signpost. It tells you, here is your choice for the journey. This is like that in many cases. But there's no choice because you get to drive the conversation. You're saying, here's the journey you're about to go on. So if you're going to try to pitch Highway 1, you might say, well, first you'll pass through beautiful, I don't know, what comes first?
Highway 1 for a reason. There's a big sign here.
It's Highway 1 for a reason. That's a good message.
Yeah.
Keep that one in your back pocket. Okay. Signpost is important, so you have a structural statement. Once the structural statement is there, well, the other part is easy. You just follow the roadmap. So if you say, first I'll talk about the isolation that elected officials often feel, your first point is, elected officials feel isolation. And then you elaborate on it. So you've laid the context. Then point two becomes, or you might transition to point two and say, let's talk about my plan to address this. The first thing I'm going to do is set up a mentorship program. So point two is, I'm going to set up a mentorship program. Then you might lay out all the steps in the mentorship program. Maybe that's all you have. That's all you have as far as a plan. Or maybe you have another point. You say, next, we're going to develop a more comprehensive onboarding process for elected officials. That would be the third point. So the first point was about what's this problem all about. Second point is step one of my plan. Third point is step two of my plan. Restate your message, call to action. You're done. It's pretty simple, right? Structure creates logic for the audience. It allows them to follow along. That's what you want to be able to do. Allow them to follow along. There are myriad choices. for how you lay out your argument. You could provide, here's all the reasons why, or here's the ways how. You could get into a situation response. Here's the problem we have. Here's what I propose we do about it, which is what we just talked about. The key is you have to have some kind of structure. If your points are just ambling points and they don't really follow any kind of logic, your audience might be coming to a different conclusion than you do at the end, which isn't ideal, since you concluded up front. Questions about the structural piece? Yes. So the question there was, what if you have background to share? It's the same thing as the mentorship program. I'll reframe it. So I believe it's important for us to address this issue of isolation elected officials feel. First, I'll give you a bit of background on what that isolation looks like. Next, I'll outline my two-step plan to help address it. So if you need background, background's often the first point. Other questions? Okay. I'm going to move us to talk about grabber. The structural component is important, yet it's not a tough concept. All of you have likely already jotted down a few ideas. It also takes a lot of time sometimes. If you're developing a full-fledged argument, you're probably going to want to sit with it for a little while and think through, what are these key points? Do they make sense? When you're going through them, make sure that all the points actually point to the conclusion that you've had. I've seen a lot of outlines where one of them is like a red herring. They're like, I really want to talk about it. I'm like, it's not part of your talk. Just save it for later. So if you find you've got one of those, be ruthless. Cut it. Or if you prefer, package it up and save it for later. So the grabber, who has ideas for how they want to open their talk, their email, their phone call, their conversation? I continue seeing the same hands. Woman in the front here, yes.
I don't know if it's a grabber or not, but.
We're going to find out.
Okay. We need to keep our seniors at home now, so it's time to realize that because of them, we have the community we do.
Second book of the day. On that beautiful grabber goes to you, my friend.
Thank you.
Great use of language, powerful grabber. What did it do for you, for those that heard it? It was about seniors, keeping seniors at home. Can we do it at the mic? I gave you a book, come on.
Okay. Denise Bertrand from Elkford, BC. We need to keep our seniors at home. Now is the time to realize that because of them, we have the community we do.
Beautiful. I like it. It's not what you say, how you say it. Do you hear the expression in her voice, too? John's going to talk more about that this afternoon. Mm-hmm. That's a great grabber. It sets context for the audience. It orients them to your subject area. Excellent. Other ideas in the room? I won't make you go to the mic. Gentleman in the front, yes.
I've often been told at work that I'm a good communicator. My wife never tells me.
Great. A little bit of self-deprecating humor, but it's pretty light, so he's not cutting himself down. Humor is a great way to open. Be careful. This one works brilliantly. Be really careful with humor. People get it wrong a lot, like an awful lot. And they do it publicly a lot, so I hear about it. But humor also connects people to one another. So it's not inherently bad, but I'll put a huge caveat on it. If you're not 100% sure, don't do it. If you have an even inkling of a doubt about how it might land, just kill it. Also consider, why are you using humor? Does it help orient the audience to your subject area or to you as a speaker? If it doesn't, then it's just self-serving, and you're there to serve the audience. So being known as the funny guy serves you, not the audience. Other ideas for grabber? Yes?
It takes twice as long now to say for down payment on a house as it did.
Yes, a factual grabber. Thank you. We just covered all three. Guess what? There are three types of grabbers. We have personal, we have factual, and we have literary. We kind of covered literary, loosely. The cool part about the grabber is it's creative. So you get to decide how you want to open. Remember this. The role of the grabber is to either set context for the audience or build rapport. A great one will do both at the same time. It helps to orient the audience to your subject area. For those that are thinking about doing something literary, you don't have to reach deep into history to find literary content. A newspaper article, if you share it or something you learn from it, is a literary grabber. It's somebody else's words that you are then using. If somebody in your local government or someone that is close to you said something one time that you thought was powerful, you can reshare it. It's a bit like a retweet. Okay, that one didn't land, all right. You can reshare it. It's literary. You don't need to quote Gandhi. Sure, wonderful human being, often overdone. Churchill's the same. So with the grabber, here's my second caveat. Avoid building your entire script around something really clever that you want to share at the beginning. Here's why. If the whole script hinges on this grabber being delivered and actually connecting with the audience properly, what will happen when you walk into the room and either you're late, or the mood has changed, or the context is wrong, and it's just the wrong time to do this grabber? You'll be afraid to throw it away. You won't. You'll deliver it, it'll fall flat, or it might not go so well, and the rest of your talk won't go well either. You have to be prepared to throw it away at a moment's notice, and just walk to the front of the room and say, "Good morning, my name's Travis," and then go from there. So you don't want the entire script to hinge on it. But you do want the entire script to hinge on a message. So I have one final book to give away, and I know that I'm getting on my time. We'll get there. So I need one volunteer. And yes, you're going to come to a microphone. Yes. I'm going to bring, you better bring that script with you. I hope you, unless you memorized it. I would like to hear with as much enthusiasm as you can, deliver whatever content you have. If you have a grabber, go for it. If you have the subject, great message. If you want to even share some of your structural points, you go for it, and then hit that call to action.
Okay, I care about what you think is my grabber.
I want to pause you for a second, since this is our grand finale. Avoid telling us where you are on the script. Just go.
Oh, okay.
And that was my poor instructions. You're doing great. Just go for it off the cuff.
Let's talk about the Kinder Morgan's community agreement. I care about what happens in Evola. And I believe that you are concerned about how the Kinder Morgan community benefits money will be spent in Evola. And I'm here to listen. Here's the decision that we made 3 years ago. And lastly is, the call to action is, have a cup of coffee and tell me what you think.
Nicely done. So our third and final book will go to you. All of these books, by the way, are written by either our former CEO, Judith Humphrey, or our current CEO, Bart Egnall, Judith's son. So we have come to the end of our time. And let me see, I've got my slides out of order. I got to fix that at the break. So you've all been oriented to the first two parts of this leadership communication model. We talked a bit about language. You all now have the ability and the awareness to communicate as leaders, at least in a written format. So here's what I ask. First, is fight your primal instincts to forget about what we talked about and do nothing. I know, but this is how training works, okay? If you don't use this within the first 60 days, you're going to lose about 98% of it. I would say that it probably is more dramatic than that. Try to find something, some opportunity you have to work on this. Don't try to solve the world's problems with this. So maybe if you've got a keynote coming up or a big talk, don't try to do all of it. Just say, you know what, my goal with this big talk is just to have a clear message. If everything else is a little all over the map, I'm okay with that. So start small. Maybe for you, you don't have a keynote coming up, and you're like, I want to practice. You're going to catch up on emails tonight, right? Probably. Make sure all the emails that you write tonight have a clear subject line. That's called starting small. That's how you build habits around this. Last piece is practice and show others. So I told this gentleman from, is SLRD, is that where you, did I get that right? From SLRD, he said, I teach kids how to tell stories and I use a similar framework. If you want to go teach people this in your organization, what we just taught you, or you want to show somebody, do it. We're not picky about who sees this stuff, it's on our webpage. When you show somebody something, the chances of it actually sticking with you are about 100-fold. You got a colleague, you got a friend at work, whoever it is, your kid, show them. If they have a high school English essay coming up, you better show them. Lastly, I'd like to thank you for your time and to let you know that this afternoon's session will be led by John Voth, who you didn't hear a lot from. The reason for that is that we both have different areas of specialty. John is an award-winning stage actor locally here in Vancouver beyond being a professional. He won a Jesse Award, which is the Lower Mainland's Acting Awards, which is like an Oscar for the Lower Mainland. And he has...
Oh, thank you.
He has specific expertise around presence and coaches a number of our clients in this area. So you're going to have a lot of fun if we see you. If not, take what you learned, use it, show it, fight the urge to not. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Travis and John. We now have a refreshment break. It's available out in the foyer just outside the room, and the next sessions begin at 10:30 promptly. Thanks.